This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome our next guest onto the podcast, all the way from Chicago, Illinois. He is no stranger to racing on the Big Island. He's been many, many times, and we'll chat a little bit about that on today's podcast as well. He's also a pretty decent coach in his own right as well, and very, very active on the website trainingbible.com. If you want to find out more about him and some of the services they offer as well, go check it out, okay? And we'll pop all those links in the show notes too. So without further ado, let's head off to Chicago in Illinois and catch up with Adam Zucco. We head to Chicago, Illinois now, and we're joined by someone who's no stranger to the triathlon scene. Adam Zucco, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us today.
No, thanks, Brad. I'm honored that you asked me to be on, so anything I can do to help, for sure.
Adam, you're no stranger to triathlon. It's been part of your life for a long, long time.
Yeah, my dad got me involved way back in, almost before I was in high school. So it's definitely been part of my life for a long time, definitely part of my lifestyle. So I love it. I love the sport and everything about it, for sure.
Can you imagine your life without it?
I can't. And, you know, I see my dad, he's kind of one of my biggest idols. He says he's a completer, not a computer right now. But, you know, I just want to still be his age and continuously doing the things he's doing as well. So I just think it's a great lifestyle.
I love that. I want to ask about your dad. What is, is he still competing? What you say is a completer, but how old is he and what is he still doing?
He was born in 1950, so I always have to say that and then do the math. So I guess that will make him 66 this year. And he's done probably 17 Ironmans. He's definitely a middle to the back of the packer now. But he was pretty lucky to do Kona with me one year on the Legacy program, which he thought was pretty awesome. So that was neat that he and I got to go do that. But he did have to get some reconstructive knee stuff going on this year. So he's fighting his way back in. He's supposed to do 70.3 Boulder this year with my sisters. And he's just a salt of the earth type guy. So when we have people who are interested in getting in the sport or a bit intimidated about aspects of it, one of the things he loves to do is just take people out and kind of literally show them how to shift their bike or ride hills or how to kind of mentally think about completing a triathlon, because it can be mentally overwhelming at first. So he's very good at breaking things down into manageable pieces. And there's honestly times I've been out in on the Queen K and I've had to think back to some of the advice that he's given me, which is crazy, but sometimes you just have to go back to the basics, you know, and it's definitely pulled me through some rough times.
That's so cool, Adam. And the reason I ask that is because I get quite excited when I hear stories like that. My dad, funnily enough, also, he did his first Ironman at 67 last year. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, my brother and I have been doing it, and he's been coming down to watch us do Ironman South Africa for the last 3-4 years, and he decided he got a bee in his bonnet and he wanted to do it. So I love hearing stories like that. That's awesome. So cool. And it's cool that it's a bit of a family affair for you guys as well. I mean, you talk about your sisters as well. Everyone's into the sport.
No, it definitely is. And my sisters are definitely recreational at best, but they're into so many other things, and it's cool that they're involved. And they've liked to throw my name around, although it doesn't get them much. But they were bringing up the back of the pack once at Eagle Man. They were literally the last two people on the course, and they were told they were going to get a penalty for drafting and blocking because they were riding next to each other. And they were like, "Don't you know who my brother is?" Like, it's probably not going to get you anything there. But so after they were out of the penalty tent, they continued on. You know? So
that is brilliant. Adam, let's talk about your journey into the sport, and you were exposed to it at a fairly young age. When did you realize you were actually pretty good at this?
Man, I don't know if I have realized that yet, to be honest with you. So, no, but seriously, I grew up kind of playing the traditional sports here in the States, you know, the baseball, football, occasional swim team. I mean, I went to a military school, so our practice was, you know, 30 to 40 minutes at best on the day. So nowadays, competitive high school sports can be almost a profession in themselves. So I definitely didn't grow up with that level of intensity, but I just loved being out on the field of battle, right? Like competing with friends, or, you know, if it was a competition I was in, and I love to try to figure out ways to be competitive with my friends. And, you know, kind of my dad, who I still idolize, you know, grew up, when I was growing up, he always did endurance sports. So he would drag me around for an occasional 10K, that type of thing. And, you know, I kind of really got away from it. Actually, you know, after high school, I got into I'd been in the military school and very strict discipline. And when I went off to college, I think I put on, I don't know, 50 or 60 pounds. I got up to about 240 pounds. And I can remember being in college, kind of laying on my bed, and, you know, I could feel like my face, the weight of my face, like going to the mattress. And I was like, man, this is like, I've put myself into a bad spot here, you know? So I'm like, that's it. I'm going to join the Marines. So I decided to go join the Marines with my friends. And I had aspirations of getting into law enforcement and whatever. So I thought this will be good, you know, be good on the resume, get me in shape, and kind of get my life back together. And you have to join, you had to do a mile and three pull-ups. And I couldn't do either of those. So I was like, oh man, this is really not good. So I had to go train to run the mile and a half, and then eventually got in. And then right before I left for boot camp, they told me that if I wanted to go with my friends, I was going to have to be at my height weight standard. And I was about 38 pounds over that. So I had 2 weeks to drop 38 pounds, which I did, and told myself there's no way I'm ever doing that again. And then that was in 1993. So from that point, I decided to kind of take triathlon more seriously and as a way to stay fit. So when I came back out of the Marines, I was in the reserves. So I didn't have to, you know, be there for several years. But when I came back out, I started training with my buddies and talking about context everyone can understand. I did, I think, one of my first Olympic distance races in just under 3 hours, and then kind of quickly got into that 245 range for that. And then, you know, I was always getting dropped on runs, always getting dropped on bikes. I could remember vividly trying to get to the point I could do an Olympic distance swim without having to breaststroke. It wasn't a question of skill. I just simply didn't have the endurance or fitness. And so I love that I had to go through that, because I feel like now as I come into contact with people, I can relate to so many different things. And I mean, there's so many people out there that are better than me. And a lot of it comes with race selection and all that other stuff. But I've been at that end of the spectrum. And I think a couple of years ago in the kind of wonky WTC rankings, I was ranked first in the world for 70.3 for my age division. And then, so I've kind of covered all scopes of it, you know? So, I could talk about any aspect you want me to talk about for sure, but there's definitely tons of different ways I could go with that. But, you know, one of the things I'll tell, I know your listeners are probably out trying to achieve whatever their next goal is. And I just had a talk with one of my athletes this morning who was getting discouraged because he's trying to qualify for Hawaii, as a lot of people I work with do. And, you know, the big thing I keep telling them is you can't look at the totality of the situation. You know, kind of goes back to like what my dad was talking about, you know, like what are the things you can be doing kind of like right now? What's the next low hanging fruit you could go get right now? And for me, when I was trying to keep up with my friends, that was overwhelming. I was so behind them that I would just try to figure out ways I could make it to the next corner or not get dropped in that street another time. Or, you know, what are the things that I could do in transition to kind of clean up my transition just a little bit. And then eventually that got me to where I was all of a sudden kind of racing with them and then competitive with them. So,
Adam, you mentioned the starting out with an Olympic distance. When did the sort of penny drop that you wanted to do the longer stuff, the 70.3s, the halves, and then eventually going on and doing a full Ironman distance triathlon?
Yeah, no, that's actually a great question, because that's another thing that I talk to my athletes about right now is, you know, back in 94, 95, even through 2000, I think in 2000 they had Lake Placid and they had Ironman Florida and Canada. And those were the three Ironmans that you could get into. You know, before that, I remember qualifying for Hawaii at Olympic distance races, you know, and none of us were out there doing all these long course races. So kind of by the nature of the sport growing up at the same time I did, I guess, we were forced to kind of go do these longer distance or short distance races prior to the longer ones. I could remember, I guess, you know, I'm trying to do the math in my head, 98-ish, 97, we heard about this Ironman that you could go do up in Montreal. And I think it was called the Esprit Ironman or something like that. And I mailed in my check, you know, with a copy of my driver's license and got accepted into this thing. And I had no business even registering for this, you know. And thank God one of my college roommates talked me out of going. But it was something crazy, like a 60-lap bike course and a 30-lap run course or something like that. And you swam in this pool, you know. But there was just no long-distance racing going on. Nowadays, it's challenging, I think, because people jump right into Ironman or they jump right into that 70.3. And it's kind of unfortunate because sometimes people say, oh, it's, you know, you're not really, you know, they don't feel validated as a triathlete until they've kind of checked that distance off. And I can understand that approach, but sometimes I really try to slow my athletes down and just be like, listen, let's accomplish the other distances first and kind of work your way up healthily. So, you know, I really like the half Ironman distance myself, all of it put together. I really think that it provides the best mix of, you know, endurance, strength, speed, skill. You know, it's long enough that you're going to race a lot better if you get your nutrition right, but you're not out there for an extra 7 hours if you don't, you know. You can do several of them each year. So, but yeah, I started getting in. I did my first Ironman in 1999 with Ironman Florida. And I had a mechanical in that. I was able to finish, and I had some plantar fasciitis going on in my foot. Ironically, the night before the race, I just was standing in the shower washing my head, and then all of a sudden my foot hurt me so bad. I was like, had to sit down in the shower. It wasn't even, it made no sense, you know. But I mean, welcome to Ironman. That should have given me the first indication what that was going to be like. And I started doing the bike ride that I had trained for, and my family came and was watching me. And about 5 miles into the bike ride, my handlebars literally snapped in half right to the left of my steer tube. You know, it's like, geez, you know, like I have all these extra tubes, I have all this nutrition, I don't have extra bars, right? Like, what am I going to do with this? You know, so I ended up thinking, thank goodness I had literally a mechanic stand, I think, underneath my saddle, you know. So I ended up loosening up the clamp and then putting the crack into the, you know, where the stem bolts onto the cross tube. And was able to ride with my bars pretty off-centered for the rest of the ride and finish. But from that point forward, I was always like, I'm going to try to do this again, right? Try to do better and see what I can accomplish, you know.
And the bug obviously bit. Your first sort of thought of Kona, when did you start thinking that you want to go race at the World Champs in Kona?
Yeah, honestly, I got to the point I started to see a fair amount of success in the Olympic distance. So, you know, like I said, I started out kind of going around 3 hours, and then I quickly got into that 240, 230 range. I'd hired a bunch of, like, back in the day, some coaches and all that other stuff. And I could remember getting into that 210 range, 215, and then training really, really hard and getting a little slower. And my dad, who was obviously the most supportive person in my life for this, was just kind of patting me on the shoulder going, this might just be all you have, you know, coming from someone who couldn't run a mile and a half to now, you know, 215 is pretty good, you know. And I could remember being at a pro check-in or the expo check-in once and talking to this pro who was helping. And, you know, we asked, you know, how his race had gone the weekend before. And he said he had a bad race. And, you know, we said, wow, did you go like 220? And he's like, oh no, not that bad, you know. And that was something I was aspiring to, you know. And so it's just like, you know, so at 215 I was kind of like, oh, but anyway, I'm classic long answer. I finally got into that 154, 155 range. So I found some success in the sprint distance. I'd stepped right up to the Olympic distance, I mean the half Ironman race, and then but not too many of those. I kind of got right into the Ironman, and like I said, I had that trouble initially. And then the next race that I had done, I had terrible GI trouble, like terrible. I threw up so much in most of my Ironman races that I swear I was looking for gum that I swallowed when I was a kid, you know, on the side of the road. I mean, it was crazy. And it used to be so frustrating to me that I couldn't do what I was doing in training, you know. And so just like when my dad was telling me, you know, maybe 215, 210 is kind of your capping point, I had a lot of people start telling me, you're just not an Ironman athlete, right? Like, you're meant for short course. You're built for short course. That's your thing. You know, what are you doing? You know, they'd use Mike Pig as an example or whatever. And they'd just say, but I knew in my heart that there were more stones to unturn, right? Like, I hadn't done everything yet. There was something there that I knew in my every fiber of my being that there was legitimately, no, I could go. I know there were steps to go take, right? And I knew that having that attitude and backing yourself, myself, had gotten me into that elite range for the Olympic distance races as an age grouper. So I knew that there was something I had to figure out. So in 2003, I had a friend who sponsored Hawaii, and he actually gave me an entry fee or an entry into the race. And I really felt like I didn't belong there, you know? And so I got to do the race that year, but at that point I had done maybe 8 or 9 races. And I think I had DNF'd half of those Ironman races. The best I had done to that point was just under 12 hours, I believe, or just under 11 hours. So, I mean, okay, but not anywhere where I was ranked for my Olympic or even half stuff. And so I just felt like for this race, I'm going to just watch the show and not become part of the show, you know? And so I'm just going to kind of hang back and stay, and just no matter what. I said, if I have to ask myself, am I going too fast? I'm going to slow down. Like, that's the answer all day long. I think I rode 5:45, which I got off my bike twice. I stretched my feet. I went to the bathroom. You know, I just really tried to pedal my bike easy. And at that point, we really didn't have great online coverage. So I was just looking forward to seeing the pros and seeing the race. And I just was like, man, I want to finish this race no matter what. The other cool thing was in 2003, I think that was their 25th anniversary. So at the pre-race banquet, they were actually giving away Ironman trophies, like the initial one. So I was like, no matter what, I'm getting to the finish line. I want one of those trophies, right? So I just made it a point to myself to just kind of go there and relax. And I said, I'm going to try to negative split the run, you know? And so I said, I have to go as slow as I can for the first part of this run if I have any chance at negative splitting, especially if you know the Hawaii course. And so I did, you know, I ran like 4 hours. I negative split by like 1 minute or something crazy like that. But, and I went 10:50 something. So I had actually PR'd by an hour by going very, very easy all day, you know, and that was really an eye-opening experience for me. And I think that I was fortunate to be given that chance. Had I qualified straight away for Hawaii and gotten there, I think that I would have put myself under the same pressure and potentially would have had a bad day there. And then, just like all my other Ironman races, what was becoming so hard for me was I knew that I had to relax to have a good race, but I couldn't relax until I had a good race. And it was kind of like the chicken or the egg thing, right? And so I would get into these races like with all this anxiety to perform. And then because I had all this anxiety, my stomach would get upset or whatever, and then I would not perform, and then therefore it would just snowball. So that actually helped really break that pattern for me. And so now I've been fortunate enough that I've had some rough Hawaiis, but not for any other reason than just being injured, you know. So since then, I've been back there 8 times. So I've raced Hawaii 9 times. So,
I mean, that's incredible. We chat to a lot of athletes here that have been at 1, maybe 2, maybe 3 times. But I think you're probably the person we've spoken to who's been the most. Is there such a thing as a perfect performance in Kona? And it probably applies to any Ironman distance race because it's so long. I mean, there's lots of things that can go wrong. Have you had the perfect race in Kona?
You know what? I have to say I have. And I've been chasing that ever since. And so, you know, there can be so much background to this, but we'll fast forward then maybe kind of come back to it. Maybe that'll work well. But I had hired Dave Scott, Joe Friel, Wes Hobson, Chris McCormick, currently really good friends with Crowley, Teal. I mean, I've always sought out people to try to just gather the best information and then come up with my best plan, right? And so, you know, there was no stone that I would leave unturned. And then finally, I was just like, going into 2010, I had been there 2008, 2009, I was around 10 hours and 7 minutes, 10 hours and 4 minutes. No matter what Ironman I did, Florida or whatever, I was always 10:02, 10:07, 10. It just always worked out that I would kind of fall apart a little bit on the run, and I would run almost 4 hours and, you know, bike kind of in that 5 to 5:15 range, and I would always be in that 10-ish area. Well, I was lucky enough to qualify at half Ironmans for the first few years that I started going there, so there's that caveat. And so when I got to Hawaii, though, flying over in 2010, what I had done was I had read a book by Bobby McGee, and he had talked about coming up with, you know, targets and arrows and all this other stuff. It's called Magical Running. I'd really recommend that chapter to anybody. But I talked to that about with my athletes now. And if you look at my blog in 2010, way back, I was flying over to Hawaii. And I was already happy with my race before the race had even started, which was a paradox or a change in how I thought about things. Because what I realized from reading that book and kind of what I'd come up with that summer was like, you know what I need to do? Instead of worrying about the race, I need to think about what is the kind of athlete, if I was going to create an avatar, what would that avatar look like, and what could that avatar do in order to go perform well at Hawaii? And so for me, I had to look at where was I short on that list. So I had trouble in the heat. My weight was never bad at that point. You know, I got up to 240, and then I would be hanging out in the 160s, 165, 166. So I thought, okay, I'm not a fat individual, but in terms of like performance, and especially at that level, I'm carrying a little extra weight. My nutrition wasn't extremely dialed in. I needed to maybe work on my hills. I needed to work on my pacing. I came up with this whole list for myself, and I checked off every list, everything on that list that summer. And I could confidently say about a month out, yep, I've done it. Right. Like, now, if I have forgotten something off my list, or if I needed to add something or whatever, like, I can always come back and add that. But I've done everything I've asked myself to do. And now at this point, it's just kind of up to whatever happens that day. Right. And so I got to that race already kind of feeling like I've done everything that I needed to do. Like, I had lost 10 pounds. I was 155. I mean, everything for a guy who was always overweight, it was just perfect. And so I got onto the swim. I came up with this bike plan, which I still use to this day. I have my athletes use, and I feel like it's extremely successful. But I came up with a kind of an unorthodox way to think about how to attack that course, which, you know, it kind of shortens the course in some regards with how you kind of displace your effort. But I, at that point, had never been higher than, I don't know, 100th or so in my age group at 10 hours. It's crazy. You're going to be pretty far back. And so halfway through the bike, I was executing my plan. I was trusting in it, which was really hard. At the top of Javi, I had some people that I knew were normally in that 9 to 9:15 range, who I had a lot of respect for. And I found myself around those people. And then when you flip it at Javi and you're coming back down, somebody yelled to us, hey, you guys are number 25th and 27th in the world at this race right now. We're amateurs. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, I had never been better than 100th in my age group there. And now I'm riding with these guys, right? And it was really cool, I thought. And I was like, not as cool as being in the top 25. So I'm going to go cast two people, you know, and say I was in the top 25. So then I got those two people, you know, and I was like, well, this is cool. Not as cool as being in the top 20, you know. And then I did that to myself all the way until I think I was like seventh. And then I finally had to say, like, whoa, stop. Like, this isn't what you came here to do. You came here to race your day, right? And so I can honestly say when you get to the end of the Queen K and you've passed the airport, you have a right-hand turn that takes you down by like a Sports Authority and a Target and all this. I felt like I could have gone and done the course again. Like, I really felt like I had paced so well to that point. I was excited to go run. And so my first run, I was running very quick, faster than 10K pace. And I had to tell myself, like, relax, relax, relax. And I went through mile 10 when you have to go up Pilani, and I saw my family there. And I was like, I was yelling at them, I can't believe this. I feel awesome. You know, I still feel great. And I got up mile 15. I actually started to cry a little bit. Like, not, you know, but I was just like, wow, I'm having that day that everyone dreams of. I can't believe it. Right. And I knew that within 10 miles left, I was going to actually be able to finish it. I was hoping, you know, and so you run down into the energy lab and then you're coming back up like that mile and a half, 2 mile thing. And that's the only place I stopped for a second. And I'm like, okay, this is a long hill. I'm going to stop and walk. And I'm going to walk for a minute, I told myself. And I walked for about 30 seconds. I'm like, dude, what's wrong with you? Like, nothing hurts. I mean, obviously, disproportionate to expectations, right? You're not cramping. You're not sick. It's like, you're tired, but you're supposed to be tired. You're doing an Ironman. You know, you're 20 miles into this Ironman race in Hawaii. Like, get your ass moving, you know? And I stopped feeling sorry for yourself and run. And I actually got back down to my 720s or 730s and finished with a 315 or 316 marathon and went 916. And to this day, I can remember Mike Riley announcing that I had just gone an hour faster than the year I had gone before. But I was like thinking to myself, wow, I just had that day, right? And that's awesome, but it sucks because I'm going to have that day again to be able to beat it, you know? And so I've been kind of chasing that day ever since, you know? And since then, I think I ended up, which is crazy. This just tells you the level of competition of why I was 9:16 and eighth in my age group.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think I was 38th amateur overall. I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's crazy how fast people are racing there. And, you know, I've since gone back and thought I'm going to try to podium in the age group and all the other stuff. And I think I've been off the bike as high as second or third overall, you know, but it just kind of gets you back into that into that racing, other people's races stuff. And so, sorry, I told you I'm a rambler. So
no, that's all good. My strategy is to outlive everyone in my age group.
I love it. I'm telling you what, though, like, I'm friends with a couple guys here that are in their 70s, and this one guy was in his 70s. He went like 12:20 at like 70 years old. It was like, if you figured it out proportionally, he would have won the race overall. You know what I mean? It was like,
that's not making me feel better, Adam. let me ask you this question. You obviously love Kona. It's, I mean, from Chicago, it's not as much of a track as from Europe, perhaps. But you obviously love Kona, and it's got a special place in your heart. If I say the word Kona, what do you think?
Queen K.
Why?
Yeah, for sure. It's your. I've been alone on that. I mean, see, if I've been there 9 times, consider every, I've been there on that Queen K at least 40 hours of my life, you know, on the, and it's lonely. So if it's you know, people are always like, oh, you went to Hawaii and, that's so lucky of you, you know, and you're like, it's not a pretty place at all. I mean, it's like being on the surface of the moon by yourself with no shade, and you know, the ocean's there, but it's far enough away that it's pretty nondescript. And then you have the volcano off to your right, but again, that's so far away, it's pretty nondescript, and it literally looks like all the asphalt roads in the world that are not being used anymore just kind of got dumped onto this one section, and there's a smooth path kind of cut through it. And yeah, that's what I think about straight away. And the very first thing I would think about when I would qualify for Kona was, oh shit, I have to do that swim again. You know, it's the most aggressive swim. You know, I mean, I've been first out of the water at Ironman Florida and stuff before, and so I consider myself an okay swimmer, but it's a fist fight in Kona for the first 500 to 800 meters, and because everybody's good, you know, and everybody is thinking they're going to win the race, you know, and it's just and that would give me anxiety, but I even have tricks now how to deal with that. So.
For someone who's listening to this who's never qualified, or perhaps they've qualified now and they're going for the first time, what advice would you give them about Kona?
You know, the biggest thing that I would say, starting with the person who's never qualified, is I would strongly encourage you to go back to that list idea that I had and just kind of come up with your perfect person that in your mind you think has to be in order to qualify for Hawaii, and then have a real honest self-evaluation and then ask some people who you know, love you enough to be honest, you know, that aren't going to feel like they're teasing you or whatever, and just be like, hey, this is where I think you need to improve, you know. And then when you start to kind of put some, I mean, you can put some numbers and metrics to it, like we know that a couple years ago the lead age groupers were riding at about 4 watts per kilo on the course, so you know, you can kind of figure that out, and then you can mathematically start to figure out what your FTP needs to be and all that other stuff. But you know, I would say first thing is you have to do is kind of come up with that list and then hold yourself accountable to that. And then if you're going for the first time, first, congratulations. That is amazing. And then I would tell you, go check out downtown Hawaii, you know, where the expo is and all that other stuff, but then kind of get out of there a little bit. There's definitely places to hang out there that you're not amongst it so much. You know, you don't catch the people who are doing really well down there very much, because it's just it does drain your energy a lot. It's very hot. You walk around a lot. It's not easy to park. And I would, like I said, I would make sure you go there with the intentions of watching the carnival, not becoming part of it. And realize that I would say 70% of people blow up. So if you get caught up in all the rigmarole and everybody trying to do really well, you have to have integrity with your plan. And what you did that got you there, you know, stick to that.
Adam, you also mentioned, and I find this quite intriguing, you mentioned that you obviously friends with some really good triathletes, and you picked their brain, and you found out you coach as well. How important is it seeking help on your journey to qualify for a race like Kona?
I think it's critical, and I can tell you that the best athletes in the world are very confident, but they also have humility to kind of ask and seek advice. And I mean, I was riding once with Crowley when he was in the middle of winning his stuff, you know, and we had some mutual friends and we're driving, and I find myself in a conversation with him kind of asking me, like, how would you run the last 10K? Or how would you train for that part of the, I'm not saying he was taking my advice, but he was willing to at least listen And whether or not he took it, I can't tell you. You know, I didn't ask, you know, but he was willing to kind of always be open-minded. And I think that that's huge as a person. I know that even as a coach, I have an athlete who's maybe going to go to the Olympics. I use every resource around to try to bring that to that athlete and, you know, and give that to that person. You know, I would never want to limit my own stuff, my own performance to my own knowledge. And I would never ask an athlete of mine to be limited to my scope of practice either, you know. So trying to surround yourself with a huge network and being confident but humble enough to kind of listen and hear things, I think is good.
As far as finding a coach, what advice would you give to someone? What should someone look for in a coach?
I think how well you click is really, you know, how well you guys get together as a personality, I think is one of the most important things. I find that the best coaches that I've had in the past are ones that make me feel good about myself, make me feel like I could go out there and accomplish things. You know, I think that that's critical. Assuming that they know what they're doing, that's obviously, you know, that becomes hard to find because everyone, it seems like, now is a coach when, you know, that's fine too. But I would check for experience. I think a lot of coaches try to brag on their own, what would you call accolades, but more importantly, like what are their athletes doing? You know, and I have a really good friend that I'm lucky enough to be a coach with. His name's Scott Iatt, but he also lives 5 miles or so from me, and we train together. And collectively, he and I have been to Hawaii probably 20 times. But we also have, I think we counted it up once, we've sent like 30 people to Hawaii that have never been, you know. And so it's like, that gives me more excitement now to like go there and watch those people and those athletes be really excited, you know. So there's definitely some really, really great coaches out there that can do that. But I would look and see what type of athlete you are. I would say, you know, Joe Friel taught me once that there's pretty much three types of athlete personalities out there. You have accountants, and accountants collect a ton of information. They have absolutely no idea why they're collecting it, but they collect every bit of data that they can, right? And then you have technicians, and they only make decisions based on data. So they collect it, and then they only make that. And then you have artists, and then the artists couldn't tell you why they're doing things. They just kind of go out and perform their craft, you know. And so I find that it's best to figure out a coach that can address all those aspects of you, you know, and because you're going to need them all on race day. And if you gravitate towards people, if you're very technical minded and you gravitate towards technical type coaching, that's okay. But you need those skills. Like, what if your Garmin doesn't turn on that night or the morning? You know, ironically, in 2010, when I had my best race, my Garmin got turned on in my transition bag, so it was almost dead before I started the race. And it was cool. With what I had done in training, I knew exactly what to do, you know. And thank goodness it lasted the whole race. But I didn't have to panic about that, which would have wasted energy.
Out of those three, what type of athlete are you?
I would say more, if you're making me pick one, I would say probably more technical. I definitely enjoy the data, but I race artistically, I would say, you know. And I was with, you know, hopefully they wouldn't think it was a bad thing, but so I'll just say I was with a very well-known Ironman performing triathlete that was telling me once, you know, just use the force out there, just go out there and use the force, you know, we're all kind of racing, you know. I'm like, yeah, but that's okay until things are going bad, then you have no information to make changes from, you know what I mean? So I definitely think you need to blend it.
Adam, as far as looking at the athletes that you're helping as well, my best mate's a coach and a pretty successful coach here in South Africa. And one thing that drives him absolutely nuts is athletes who don't trust their coaches. And I don't use that term lightly. It's a case of you tell the athlete, you know what, you should be doing this session, and then the athlete's second guessing about why they're doing it, and then they don't really do it as well as they should do it. Does that drive you bonkers as a coach as well?
Yeah, no, it totally does. And it sounds like I'd get along with your friend a lot, you know. And I, even at the end of the day, like I consider myself a successful coach, but at the same time, I still use a coach myself most of the time because you need someone to hold you accountable. And at the end of the day, I might have a disagreement with how I would want to take on training. But at the end of the day, you have to agree on a plan that you know you both are going to follow, because it's just like I tell my athletes, we don't know what to change if we don't know what the hell you're doing, you know? So it becomes pretty easy, actually, when you start to have to make things different and tweak when you know everybody's playing from the same sheet of music, you know? it becomes really hard when people are off doing their own things or not logging in. I'm sure that's another one that he loves, you know, where you're getting no feedback whatsoever from the athlete. They want to know why aren't things changing, you know?
Adam, and then finally, for you as an athlete, what's still left to achieve in the sport of triathlon for you?
Yeah, that's actually interesting. I've gone under Achilles surgery this year. I'm actually looking at my foot is coming out of the boot hopefully next week, and then I have to go in and get the other one done next week. So this year I'm most likely out for the year. I don't know if I'll go any faster. I've been there 9 times. Part of me would like to go with 10th. I think that'd be cool to say you've gone to Hawaii 10 times. But I feel like with where I've come from and what I've done, I feel very good about things, you know, and just, you know, I like being a fit person, just to show my daughter, you know, I try not to influence her she makes her own decisions, but I just try to like lead a healthy lifestyle in front of her. I have my wife who's never been to Hawaii, who, we just got married last year. She's very excited to try to get to Hawaii. And, she did her second Ironman Arizona a couple of years ago, and she missed it by 30 seconds. Boy. Felt so bad for her, you know? So, I love watching my athletes do really well. You know, and I'm going back and forth with my head every day right now with this rehab. Like, you know, I'm 40 years old. I've been doing this probably 20 years. I've been there 10 times. Like, what else do I want to do? If I wanted to go do anything else, I would probably want to try to get a podium at Hawaii. I think that, I just know how hard that is. So that would be something that would be pretty neat. But I can tell you, for those of you who are listening to your show, if I can kind of hijack your show for 1 second, and are doing their first Ironman, and I would almost throw Hawaii into this, you never get a chance to do it for the first time ever again.
Yep. Couldn't agree
and
more.
And so I try to tell my athletes, do not rob yourself of that experience. Because if you have a good day, if you have a bad day, whatever, it'll be gone forever. And so I would trade all the things that I've done for being able to go back into this and just be wide-eyed and excited about the whole prospect of it again. And I don't know if you have kids, but I have an awesome daughter, but you find yourself, like when you have kids, like, oh, I can't wait till they can hold their own bottle so I don't have to hold this bottle anymore. I can't wait till, you know, I don't have to worry about blocking the stairs. You know, I can't wait till they can just tell me what's wrong. I can't wait till, you know, and you end up wishing their lives away. And so before you know it, they're in high school or whatever. So if you're on this pursuit, it's awesome, but enjoy where you're at, you know, and don't, you know, be wanting to move forward, but also appreciate and don't stop looking around and seeing what you already have done. Because I find that a lot of athletes only look at the things that they're not doing and they haven't really looked back and thought, man, I've really accomplished a lot too. So
I think that's some great advice, Adam. And I think that's a perfect place to leave it on this one. I look forward to getting you back on where we can chat a little bit about the individual disciplines and some of the gains that you've made and over your career and some of the things your athletes are doing. But we'll save that for another time. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
No worries. Anytime, my friend.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.